Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
What's happening, everybody? Thank you for joining us for another special episode of You're Welcome. Today's show, once again, brought to you by the good folks at BetDSI.com. Guys, if there's any major world or sporting event and you want to get action on it, go to BetDSI.com. They've got a mobile app if that makes it easier. 365, 24/7 customer service. They've been in business over 20 years and they have built a reputation on letting you get paid fast and easy. Right now, set up an account. Use the promo code CHAEL25, and they will give you $25 for free, no strings attached. Let's get into the fights this weekend, man. Jacob, do you have any chance to watch? You see Khabib?
I missed that one.
All right, here, let's back up even further, because it was the return of Carlos Condit, and return fights are a big deal, particularly when you're a former champion like Carlos. And I thought that he really delivered well. He lost the fight. He lost to Neil Magny. Neil Magny's greatly underrated. I don't think anybody thought Carlos was going to get over on Neil. A prime, sharp Carlos is going to struggle all day with Neil. A Carlos that's been out of the ring 500 days, as they reported. Yeah, he's going to come up short, but he pushed the pace well. His timing was a little bit off, particularly his reactive timing for defenses, so he got struck a little bit, and Magny controlled the range a little bit better. But I thought he looked really good, even in defeat. And so many times, particularly in this sport, it's all outcome-based. You either won or you didn't. Well, I've seen guys win fights but not look good. And in this case, Carlos lost the fight, but he did look good, particularly with 500 days off. I mean, if he wants to make a full comeback and try to get two more matches in this year, I would expect we'll see the Carlos of old. And I will take it that you agree with me on that. So, let's go back to Khabib where we started, because that really was a standout performance. You know, Barboza is incredible. Barboza's ranked in the top five. Barboza should be in the top five. He should not slide in the least. Khabib had a pressure that I've never seen a UFC fighter use. It is the highest pace that I've ever seen. I've been following the sport as a fan since 1993, participating since 1997. I've never seen it. It was nonstop, bell to bell. He had two 10-8 rounds. He should have had three 10-8 rounds, but they decided the third round was a 10-9. I'm not sure based on what. The fight could have been stopped in the first round. It could have been stopped in the second round. Barboza, tougher than hell. I mean, he was doing everything he could. He was trying to win that fight. He was throwing wheel kicks with speed and power. But he really spent 99% of that contest just trying to stay alive on the ground. When Khabib got on top, he not only, with his ground and pound, Jacob, most guys when they get on top and they're ground and pound guys, a Mark Coleman, a Randy Couture style, get them down and beat them up. That is your game plan. Protect yourself from submissions and then just start pounding. With Coleman, it was largely with the fists, the ribs, and the head. With Randy Couture, it was largely with elbows once he pinned a guy in a cage. Khabib will advance position while ground and pounding. He will ground and pound, see an opening, boom, pass. Ground and pound, see an opening, boom, slide to mount. Ground and pound, start to look for your neck. He is constantly making you think about submissions while thinking about strikes. So the distraction, if you're the bottom man, in this case, Barboza, is incredible. You don't know what you have to protect, your limbs or your face. You don't know what to do. And Khabib was relentless with it, and it was terrifying. It was terrifying to watch what he could do to such a great fighter. And you can't watch Khabib, you can't watch that contest without instantly thinking, what would happen if he was in there with Conor? And the winds are largely blowing in the direction of Khabib would slaughter him. That may be true, but those winds are blowing in that direction because Khabib fought more recently. Okay, if Khabib fought 2 months ago and Conor fought last Friday or last Saturday, we'd all be saying Conor. That's just the way that works. And half the time we'd be right and half the time we wouldn't. So let's back up just a minute and try to analyze this. 80% of fights end up on the ground, but 100% of fights start standing up. On the stand-up, Connor is a very special and unique person, as he showed with Floyd, as he showed in all of his MMA fights, but as he showed with Floyd, he really knows what he's doing there. He understands range. He's super fast. He's very accurate. He's powerful. He's a little bit awkward. He's a southpaw. He's got different angles. We've got to be able to concede to that. We've got to be able to give him that. Khabib on top is going to destroy anybody. And you can put Connor's name in there, but you could substitute that with anybody you want that weighs 155 pounds. He's going to destroy them. There's nobody even close. What he did to RDA, what he did to Barboza, those things just don't happen to guys like that. You know, RDA, world champion, things just don't happen like that. So it seems to me pretty rudimentary here. Can Khabib get him down? Yeah, of course he could. But could Connor catch him before he did? I didn't think Connor could catch Jose Aldo. I didn't think he could catch Eddie Alvarez. So the point is, we don't really know how good this son of a bitch is. I didn't think he could catch Floyd Mayweather, and he caught him round after round, minute after minute, for a half hour. So it is an interesting match. I'm not on board quite yet with the Khabib destroys Connor and there's nothing to see here. I'm not on board with that yet. Connor does understand range really well. Khabib pushes right through range. Khabib understands that if I'm moving forward, the guy's power is going to be reduced, and I'm willing to take a few shots before I push him in the fence and go to work from there. But I do think that there's a lot more talking points than just simply Khabib's a man and Connor's not, and Connor's running because he's scared.
The problem here with this particular fight, there's two problems, actually, from what I saw, the Khabib and Connor fight, is if the fight happened, this would be really fun because you're talking about Connor's good on his feet. Khabib, once that's done, then it's Khabib's fight. It's reminding me of the talking points we had when we were talking about Mayweather and McGregor. It's, can McGregor get that one punch in that he's so, or in this case, he doesn't have to worry about punches. He can do his back kicks or something like that, and knock Khabib out, and the fight's over just like that. We saw that millions of times. But then all Khabib has to do, and we've seen this before, is just get Connor to go a few rounds. And then it tilts heavily into Khabib's fight. That's what makes it fun, because you just don't know, is Khabib strong enough to take that one hit?
Sure.
And it sure looked like it did from some highlights I saw, that Khabib can take that.
Yeah, and if you combine what you just said, and you had a little different analysis than I did, but if you combine what you just said and what I just said, what it equals is, we've got a reason to watch this fight. We've got a reason to want to see this fight. We've got speculation, and that's the biggest thing you need to have a fight. You're going to have one people in the camp that, yes, Connor can catch him, and another people in the camp of, no, he can't keep up with that pace and he can't deal with the ground and pound. Well, great, then let's just put him in there and fight. But that's what drives this. But before we even get to that, Dana has said Connor fights Ferguson next. That means that Connor fights Ferguson next. However, he then had a wrench thrown in his plans when it appears that Connor is out for X amount of time. And there hasn't been very many clues other than Dana is still on the Connor bandwagon. He's not mad at him. And Dana would get pretty pissed off pretty fast if somebody was being hard to deal with. And Dana says, no, he's not. He's actually not hard to deal with. And I don't have a problem with Connor, but he's in a mess right now and he's not going to be fighting until summer, if then. So it's a little bit contradictory when you're just trying to read a guy, right? I'm just left with these couple of clues. So I'm trying to read what's going on. What mess is Connor in? I thought that was an interesting word when Dana said, if we get through this Connor mess, does it just mean that the situation with Connor as a whole is a little bit hard to deal with? Does it have anything to do with the Bellator situation and the president of the ABC, Mike Mazzulli, looking to sanction him? Because as best I can tell, that's blown over. I don't think that that's on the table anymore. Does it have to do with the gangsters and the report in Ireland that they were coming to kill Connor? Well, Connor's gone out publicly a number of times. I don't think that that's a thing either. So I'm not left with very many clues here. But what mess? And it can't be that bad. I mean, you saw it. Dana gets frustrated fast when guys try to hold things up. He's got a business and he's got to have it organized so we can have these dates and specific guys and start the marketing. But you saw how fast he got pissed off at the George St. Pierre situation, or at least washed his hands of it and moved on. He's not showing any signs there with Connor. He's not showing any signs of being frustrated or washing his hands with it or thinking that he needs to move on. So it does make me wonder. I'm just wondering, well, what's the mess you're referring to, and why do we not know if he's going to fight until summer? And uh, the, but the overwhelming point is if it's not going to be he and Khabib, then that means he's out, or I mean he and Ferguson, that means that Connor's out. So that means it's Ferguson, Khabib, and maybe we shouldn't be talking about Khabib, Connor at all. Because even if it does get to Khabib, Connor, that's after Ferguson had his opportunity. He's the interim champion. So it's Ferg and Connor, winner gets Khabib, or you eliminate Connor for whatever this mess, whatever reason that is. You put Khabib in there with Ferguson for the winner to take on Connor, win it if he comes back. So I think we have to just throw Connor versus Khabib out the door right now. It's either Connor and Ferg, or it's Ferg, Khabib. Disappointingly, because that is the match that we want to see. But I think we want to see Khabib and Ferg as well. And I think we want to see Ferg and Connor too.
I also saw that Dana was saying that moving on without Connor is not... Moving on without Connor on the table is an option too. So it sounds like he's patient at this moment, but he's willing to do a Khabib and Ferg. And can I just say, I feel really bad for Ferg right now. I feel like he's getting the undershaft while everyone's dealing with Khabib and Connor.
World champion.
He's just sitting there going, I'm waiting for a fight. Like who just put someone in front of me?
World champion, and
I want that real belt.
He's found his way out of the discussion. You're right. That is not fair. That's not fair to him. But it does come back to the very first premise I talked about on here, which whoever fought last, it's just a matter of whoever fought last. That's what we do. This sport moves that quickly. And you know I saw the same article you're talking about where Dana said, you know, the company's going to move on with or without him. Yeah, no kidding. And it never ceases to amaze me. How many people do lose that? I'll give you an example. I was on something the kids call the Underground Forum. And there's this entire thread about Dana is protecting Connor, meaning he doesn't want to strip him of his belt because Connor's good for business, right? I mean, there was overwhelming support of hardcore fans that don't pay a goddamn bit of attention, apparently. How? I'll ask you this. How does Dana keeping a belt on Connor help business? So people will say that he's doing it because he cares about his business. Okay, fair enough. How does that help business? How does Connor McGregor having 12 pieces of gold sitting in Ireland in his closet somewhere help business? Does it make you buy the pay-per-view that was over the weekend that had nothing to do with Connor? Would you pay more if Connor's champion? For a pay-per-view that he's not on, would you pay less if Connor was stripped from the title? He has nothing to do with the show. He has 2 to 3 times of participation a year. The best move for business is to strip him. The best move for business is to take the belt from Connor, let somebody else come with it, bring Connor back when he's ready, and market it as Connor McGregor returns for the belt that he never lost. That's good for business. The more contenders you can have is good for business. The more storylines you can have is good for business. They just did this same script with a guy you might have heard of named John Jones. They took his title away that he never lost. They brought him back to fight for the right, to fight for the title that he never lost. And when he recaptured it, it made all sorts of different headlines because it was a new championship. And from a marketing standpoint, it went through the roof. All the way to the fact that I saw John Jones on television with Strahan, which is a show that nobody in MMA, UFC, or Bellator has ever been able to crack into because they stripped him. It was the best thing for business. They were on SportsCenter talking about stripping him. So when people say it's best for business that Dana protect Connor, they just don't know what they're talking about. Take the belt from him, build the storyline, and let him come back if he does. And if he doesn't, you drive business forward without him. I'm fine with it either way. I'm just not okay with people following the sport and not seeing what's right in front of them. It is not better for business to have Conor McGregor with the belt, which is why they took the 145 belt from him and let Max Holloway get on with it. It doesn't help you to have a title sitting on the shelf. Back up from John Jones. They left that thing around Dominic Cruz as long as they possibly could because there was a human element where Dominic Cruz was straight up injured. He tore an ACL. He did everything right. Discipline, focused, rehab, everything. He comes back. He tears the other ACL. He does everything right. He's in the gym. He's disciplined. He's doing everything he possibly could. And because of that element, they're going, hey, we're just not going to strip you. This is all you've got. It's what's driving you. We're just not going to do it. Eventually, 3.5 years went by, and they go, hey, we got to get on with it. So when Dominic finally got ready, now he's got the storyline of the champion who never lost, able to come back and claim the belt that was never taken from him, and it did great numbers. So when people talk about Dana wants to protect a guy by letting him have a belt a continent away somewhere in his closet or above his mantle because it's better for business, you got to just sit back and go, what in the hell are you talking about? How? And then you hear crickets, right? Nobody can say anything. Conor didn't even fight last year. The UFC did great. I mean, what are you talking? Or this, you know, last year, I guess we're at the new year, right? He didn't even fight, at least not in the UFC. So what are you talking about? And I never know. And whenever you have these conspiracies, you never know. What are you guys possibly saying right now? Vince McMahon used to strip guys all the time. And then he'd bring them back, have the storyline, and have a redemption story that you would have never had. You'd have never had the redemption story if you didn't first strip the guy. So if you wanted to do what's best for business, you take the belt. If you want to do what's just fair before you take a guy's title away and give him every opportunity to come out and defend, you got to wait. It's not very common that Dana has stripped somebody. That's what people are missing. He has done it. He did do it to John Jones. He did do it to Dominic Cruz. Dominic with 3.5 years. John Jones with failed drug tests. I mean, it has happened, but it's rare. Now, to put an interim title where a guy is out for a little bit and, hey, let's do something in between, yeah, we've seen some more of that. But Dana is following the lines of history, the policies that he set out. He's not treating Conor different. That premise is just false. And if he wanted to do what was best for business, it would be to take the belt. Dana White will not be on SportsCenter tonight. And I don't just mean him personally. I mean no representative, nobody from the UFC will be on SportsCenter tonight. If he took that belt from Conor McGregor, they will break into whatever story they're doing to tell it. So don't tell me it's better for business to not create drama, you dumb sons of bitches. And it's as simple as that. I'm turning on my own audience right now. My own people are on the underground just like I am. It's a major website that helps drive our sport. I go there every single day. Every fighter does. And fighters will claim that they don't go there. Every fighter is on the underground forum every single day. But it amazes me how many people love this sport and follow this sport. They don't have the foggiest idea what they're talking about. It will amaze me how many sports writers of this sport that make their living within the sport don't know the business of the sport. They don't know what it is they're talking about. You follow this for 20 years, Jacob. It's not any different than any other industry. We're not recreating the wheel. This is not the new iPhone. It's a goddamn fist fight that you're selling tickets to. The end. Okay? It's all been done before. So these people that don't understand the business, that have been in the business for 20 years, just aren't paying attention to it. Nothing new happens. It just repeats itself. You drag the cage down, you take it to a new town, you set it up, you pop the popcorn, you pour the beer, you tear it down at the end of the night, you put it in the truck, and you drag it to the next town. It's a traveling circus. But people don't even understand. I work with people in the industry, in executive office, that don't even know what we're selling here. They don't even know what this sport is. Well, I just love the sport. It's so pure. And it's yeah, okay, listen. This is about conflict with immediate resolution. That is what sells tickets. That is what keeps us alive. No, it's the best two guys in the world going out there under these rules they've agreed to. No, idiot. That's how it's marketed. It's about conflict with immediate resolution. That's what this sport is about. These guys have a conflict. Largely, but if it's personal, then great. But if it's not, the immediate conflict is they just have a like-minded goals. And only one of them can get to it. That's a conflict. The good news is we're going to give you immediate resolution tonight from the comfort of your own living room if you just push that button. That's what the business is.
And on a more recent note, that was fun to listen to, by the way. That was good. More recent note about stripping titles. He just stripped GSP. He's on board with that.
Yes and no.
And yet he came. Well, here's
more yes than no.
Here's the thing though. He's done it now to GSP twice, the biggest draw in UFC ever, and he's not above letting GSP come back and get it, which just happened.
Yeah, and the only reason I said yes and no, and now that you brought it up, you are right. GSP did get a strip twice. November 16th of 2013 is when he successfully defended against Johnny Hendricks and then goes, you know what, I think I'm going to take some time away. So they kind of tried to talk him out of that. See, hey, how serious is this? This is a guy that's pretty active for a number of years, and realized, no, he's not coming back. So you had the strip there. But the only reason I said yes and no, yes, that is officially a strip, but that was kind of GSP giving it back. Hey, go take this. He told him straight, take this. I'm not defending. He told anybody that would listen, I'm relinquishing. I accept it as a relinquish. I would use the same thing against because of the Bisping fight. GSP has 12 months to defend before he is eligible for stripping. Most guys would have used that 12 months, used whatever dialogue, oh, I'm hurt, I'm injured, I'm getting better, whatever it was, just so they could keep the media rounds going and keep the sponsorship dollars coming in. GSP came forward and said, thought I liked this weight class, realize I don't. Not coming back, decision is made, and I'm not going to screw the guys in the back just so I can go make a bunch of money on sponsors and do a media round. Not going to do it. Most guys would. I'm not that scumbag. Here you go. I took that as a relinquish as well. And I think that officially it does go down as GSP relinquished. I'm not positive that one is a strip, but I'm not positive I'm right. So it's yes and no.
Same thing, though. It's a guy who doesn't have the belt, though. That's why his fight this year, or last year, I guess we should say, is so big. Because he didn't have it anymore, and it was the guy who defended it 5 million times, just to go along with what you said.
Sure.
It's a guy who never lost and now is getting it back.
Right.
Which sounds wrong, but it works.
But that's the storyline. Yeah, so if you want to do what's best for business in a business like this, you create as much controversy as you can. Conor would come unhinged. He would be pissed. Conor's a proud man. People think he's just after the money and this is all just a show and an act. It's not. He's a proud man. He has a lot of pride in what he does. It really likes being champion. And to reinforce that, when they decided to strip him of the 145-pound belt, which was absolutely the right choice, he couldn't make 145. He's now got two belts. Why would you choose to go down to 145 when 155 is hard enough? Right? It was the right move. He was devastated. He was furious. He was more furious than he was devastated, but he took pride in that. He earned that. He worked hard for that. He had his comeuppance to get that. He stopped Jose. I mean, it really meant a lot to him. And yeah, Conor would come unhinged, but that's also good for business. And Dana's not doing that. He's going, look, I've got my own policies. I got my own set plans. This guy has not exhausted all his options yet. And I don't go in and take guys' belts away. That is not unique to Conor, no matter how many times people want to say that it is. It's not. Dana does not have a history of stepping in and taking guys' belts away without very good cause and exhausting all other options. So, yeah, that day could come. That day could come by the time you and I are sitting in here talking next week. But I don't think so. I think that would be a little bit early. And either way, until those options are exhausted, this is in line with the way Dana has acted before.
And in the
end, it's not favoritism.
And in the end, it's probably going to, well, as of right now, it is Conor and Ferg for the championship. That's their next fight. As we see it right now.
Look, we're quoting him. I mean, Dana said it himself.
That's what I'm saying. We're quoting him, and that's what it's going to be.
As of right now. Now, those things change real fast, too. But you are accurate in saying that. Nobody has said, Conor's on the shelf. Let's get Khabib and Ferg together. That has not been said yet. I think that's coming. But to your point, yes, it currently sits Conor Ferguson. You're right.
Hi, I'm Danny LaRue, host of Real GM Radio, where every week I go in-depth on NBA basketball through conversations with some of the brightest basketball minds out there, including Kevin Pelton, Nate Duncan, Chris Herring, Tim Bontemps, and team experts from all around the league. We try to separate the truth from the noise for players, teams, and NBA draft prospects alike, with a focus on the basketball itself. If you want to know what is coming next in the NBA and why, there's no better place to turn than the weekly episodes of Real GM Radio. You can can find us exclusively at PodcastOneSports.com or the new Podcast One app. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts.
You're welcome. You're welcome with JL Sonnen.
Oh, by the way, The Four-Pack Revolution, my new book. Guys, go get it with your money. It is available anywhere books are sold. If you like to buy online, go to Amazon.com. The reviews are in. The book is a success. Four-Pack Revolution, thank me later. Okay, let's move to the main event. I've got a few different thoughts here. First off, without hindsight being 2020, let's try to back up to before this fight happened. The one thing we were very confident on is that this would be a test for Cyborg. And as much as she has the allure and the fear that athletes like Mike Tyson come with, where everybody wilts in the back and nobody wants to be out there anyway, but they got the courage to walk out, put their mouthpiece in, lay down, get humiliated, and grab a check. Holly Holm's a competitor. We knew that. For sure, she is going to compete. You're going to have to beat her. She's not giving it to you. A ton of respect for her as a competitor. Well, we were right. Holly Holm went out there and she competed. She had a very difficult time with Cyborg's power, and that became apparent as the fight went on. Holly threw more air balls than I've ever seen in a fight. And what I mean by that is she threw more punches and more kicks that missed by a half an inch in rounds 2, 3, 4, and 5 than I've ever seen. And that is not meant as a negative. Holly was awesome. What it was a sign of is that in the first round, she felt that power and she was too scared to step in. She was too scared to step back. So it's better to just throw these punches, even if they don't land. Keep Cyborg off me. These are hurting me. Holly did a great job with the wrestling. Now, the wrestling in this case never went to the ground, but she clinched her, double underhooks, and pushed her right into the fence and then held her there. I don't think that was part of Holly's plan. I think Holly surprised herself with that because once she pushed her into the fence, once she held and dominated that position, she did nothing with it. She did not do foot stomps. She did not raise knees. She did not do shoulder strikes. She did not look for takedowns. She was really frozen there. So I believe that Holly was as surprised that she was able to find that position and control it and dominate it as all of us were to see Cyborg get pushed and held into the fence. All in all, my final analysis, look, I thought Holly looked really great, but Cyborg did pass the test. She went late. She went deep. She went all 25 minutes. She pushed as hard in the fifth round, if not harder, than she did in the first. I think that she was a little apprehensive. I don't think she knew herself how hard she could go late in the fight because she'd never done it. So it looked as though maybe she didn't have her foot on the pedal all the way in rounds 1, 2, 3, and 4, which is a very good and mature veteran strategy by her. But in that fifth round, it sure appeared to me that she realized, hey, I got a lot left and I'm going to leave it out here. I think that if they wanted to go 6, 7, and 8, which I know is only hypothetical, but I think she could have held up. I mean, she was bouncing and moving really well. Holly was stepping in and landing some big shots, but Cyborg as a counterpuncher, boom, 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 she'd hit her with 3. And 3 for 1 is a good deal all day long in anything, let alone in a fist fight.
I was just surprised that Cyborg got a better of Holly in her own game, like Holly's own game. That was the fun part for me, just going, yikes, this is supposed to be Holly's day to show up what she can do as good as Cyborg is. But then I guess that's just how good Cyborg is.
Yeah.
Because she was able to counterattack and hold off one of the best boxers in the female rounds.
Yeah. And I buy into that, too. You know, I've bought into that as well. That it was her. I picked Holly. I thought we were going to see an upset there. And I was close. I mean, Holly really did fight a good fight. I don't know how close. The fight was close if people didn't see it. Now, if you look at the scorecards, it was 4-1. But even those four, there was only one. You know, Holly won the first round. Then there was one where, yeah, for sure, Cyborg won. But the other three, I did think Cyborg. I did lean to her. I had it the same way the judges had. But it was close. I had to think for a second. It was close. It was a very competitive fight. And if Holly wouldn't have been intimidated by that power and would have stepped in, they're even closer. You know, she went out there and fought a really good fight. But I will tell you, the organization behind boxing and kickboxing is loose at best. And we've discussed that on here many times. You know, Holly won 17 world championships. That didn't mean ever one single day was she the best in the world. And again, not a slight on Holly. A promoter puts on a show, he's got the right to make the main event as glamorous as he can, including put up a belt that he ordered on the internet for $300, and I could tell you the website they buy him at, and call it a world championship. Holly is not wrong to declare herself world championship if she wins that fight. it doesn't have the architecture that any other sports do. It does not have the architecture that the NFL or the NBA or Major League Baseball, where we can all stand back and go, okay, here's how we're going to contest this. And when it's done, we're going to accept the result, and whoever leaves with that trophy, that they are the best. It doesn't have anything like that. The Olympics, the NCAA, nothing. It is as simple as a promoter getting a license and ordering the belt and then saying this is for the world championship. So it's not a coveted group that takes place in high schools and colleges. It's not at Olympic Village, at least the kickboxing portion, where it's an actual championship. But I did think with her experience, to your point, when Cyborg is walking into her world, that is true. I did think that it would favor Holly. And there was some parts of there that Holly looked better than Cyborg. But Cyborg stayed very tight. You know, Holly would come in with a lead left with no setup behind it, no jab or anything, just a lead straight left. Vitor used to do that. Connor does this to this day. Then Holly was doing it. Vitor and Connor always had a follow-up. They used that left and then boom, boom, boom with some other strikes. Holly would throw that left, stand there, get hit three times by Cyborg, and then have to re-engage. I couldn't figure out why she wouldn't throw that left and dip to get away, or throw that left, change elevation to get away, throw that left, come back with a hook like Connor does to get away. That part was a little bit confusing. But I'm playing Monday morning quarterback. Bottom line, Holly fought awesome. She fought with all of her heart. She has lost four of her last five fights. She is still the number one contender. There is no but. There is Cyborg and Holly, and then there is a big gap. And I don't even know who comes in at number three or four. I don't know. If you want to do any kind of business in that division right now, you need to get the Iron Lady back. That's the outside of that, you've got to start from scratch. And I think that's what they're going to have to do. That's the business they're in, but that's exactly what they're going to have to do, is start from scratch. Holly Holm, regardless of her recent record, without question, is the second baddest dude in the world at two different weight classes. That's more than Cyborg can say. Cyborg's a champion, but only at one. She can't get to 135. Holly could bounce back and forth, and there's no one that can beat her at 135, aside from a man. I mean, she's that good, and she's that good at 45. Incredible competitor. Shame on anybody saying Holly should retire and her record stinks and she doesn't deserve a shot. Shame on them. She went out there and did heavy lifting. She took big risks. She didn't get the big reward, but she does with me.
You know what I'm sensing in the future right now? Until kind of like what you're saying about the weight class, how it is Holly and Cyborg, I'm sensing a little bit of a rivalry going on. I'm sensing a few Holmes and a few Cyborg fights coming up in the future until they can plug that gap again, because it seems like it's building again. They found two really good fighters now, but until they can fill that gap, this might be a thing coming up in the future.
Yeah, and Holly should not miss this opportunity if she wants that rematch, because I am very right when I tell you it is Holly and Cyborg. So how do you do that, though? How do you resell that and repackage that to the audience? We just saw it, and it was 4-1 Cyborg. How do we say, well, tell us what happened. You know, look, tell the truth. I've been a 35-pounder basically my entire career. I went up to 45, but I didn't really have time to do it. I went into training. The size was off. My weight was off. I got surprised in a couple of positions. Tell us what happened. Tell us what would be different. And all of a sudden make us go, okay, I would watch that again. Because it was a very competitive fight. But for any narrative to be started, that spark, which hopefully can turn into a flame, and then all of us as media and fans can throw gasoline on it, has to be started with Holly. No one else can start it. It has to be started with her to say what happened. I'll give you an example for myself. I missed a huge opportunity. And I don't miss very many of them, but I missed a huge opportunity. I fought Anderson Silva. Second time. Biggest fight in history. Most eyeballs on it. This isn't to build up the fight. I'm going somewhere different with this. Anderson threw a knee that was while I was down, that was perceived to be an illegal knee. Now, I knew where that knee landed. It landed legally. Anderson knew where it landed. It landed legally. What I didn't know is that the announcers and the audience and the angle that knee threw at, that it also landed on my face, which is illegal. The blunt of it hit me in the chest, legal, and then his thigh comes up into my face. So everybody goes, oh, my God, illegal knee. That fight's illegal. That should be redone. I did not know that this dialogue was out there. I did not know that Joe Rogan and Mike Goldberg were relaying this to the audience of, hey, we have to see that again from a different angle. I think he just did an illegal knee. Had I been aware that that narrative was out there immediately following the fight, I would have said, illegal knee, run this one back. And they would have done it instantly. But I have to start that. I didn't start it because I didn't know, because I'm the one that got hit. And I knew it was fine. It was fair play. Point is, has it start with me if I was the principal? Point is, it has to start with Holly. She is in position. Even at one win and four losses in her last five tries, she is the number one contender. So tell us why you should get that shot again. Because I'm willing to listen. I actually want to see the fight. I'm willing to listen. But I got to hear it from you. And I haven't heard it yet.
Just got to get back in the gym at this point.
Did you see what the photographer did? The Holly Holm, the Wink Jackson credentialed photographer?
I saw a tiny headline, and I did not read the rest of it. Fill me in.
All right. So this guy, you know, and he got a little too close to the action. I'm not as pissed at the guy as some people are, just because I know how those emotions of those fight goes. And it's really hard to separate yourself. But if you are a credentialed media person, you had better learn how to separate yourself. He is not a coach and not a teammate. And if he is one of those two things, he should not have been given a credential. So I really think that's as far as it goes. I'm not quite on board with let's lynch this guy. But all right, so we got this credentialed photographer, and I think he was making like some videos, like video blogging for Holly or whatever he's doing. Still shots, not really the point. He comes out after the fight, and I think it was on Instagram. If I'm wrong, it was Facebook, but social media, and said, "Yeah, Holly." I'm paraphrasing, but you know, Holly really gave him a great fight. He said that she's the first one to make his nose bleed. So every time he referred to Cyborg, it was like she was a male, right? Are you getting the point here?
Mm-hmm.
Very rude. In front of everything, it was very rude. Cyborg took issue with this, but she didn't go too far with it. She didn't go, "Oh, you know, to hell with this guy, and I never want to see him there again." She said, "Yo, you can't do that with a credential. You're held to a different standard. I expect an apology, or I expect you to return your credential." Very fair of her to demand that. Very, very fair. She was not too dramatic with it. She was very fair. Respect to Cyborg. So the media guy came out, and I think he tried to give an apology, but he just couldn't do it. He just wasn't there yet. He was still too emotional about it. And so he kind of led him with the apology, but then wanted to tell his side of the story. It's like, well, that's not really how an apology works, right? Apology is, "I'm wrong. I'm sorry." Lay out. You're done. And then hope the other side accepts, which I think Cyborg would have, because it was the apology she asked for. All right. So this guy comes out and he goes, "But there was more to the story. I was in the bus, and it was the last bus to leave the arena for the hotel, and it was just me in there with all of Cyborg's team, and I heard them talking about Holly, and at one point she called Holly a bitch, and they saw a photo where Cyborg kicked Holly and her toes went right in Holly's eye, and they all laughed." Man, I'm not seeing your point here, okay? If they were in private, whatever they said is fair game, including the word bitch. And secondly, if she threw a legal kick and the toes went in the eyes and I saw a picture of that, yeah, you might get a chuckle and go, "Look at that." There's just nothing out of bounds there. There's nothing where you can then come out publicly and try to embarrass the opponent like that. You just can't. And he shouldn't have done the apology with the "but let me tell my side."
Classic
I do,
move.
Yeah, I do want to say this, though. He needs to lose his credential. That's true. He needs to learn how to do an apology. That's true. But that's where this ends. Okay, let's not fillet and embarrass the guy forever. He was attached to it, man. He cared about his athlete. He was trying to do his little part. He didn't do a good job of compartmentalizing and you know, separating himself. He got a little involved with the team. Those kind of things happen. I say we leave it alone.
You got to admit, though, it is fun when someone comes out and they don't understand the art of the apology. It's so much fun because so many people get it wrong. And it's like you know immediately. There's really no rule exactly, but you just know. And as soon as they're like, "but let," and it's like, it's gone. I don't buy it anymore. I love watching those, though.
No, I did, too. I mean, the whole thing was a little bit fun, but it is a tough spot. And you know, he may not have known that. He could just go, "Hey, I'm a teammate. I love Holly. We go back 20 years and I got a camera and ask for a credential." He may not have understood. He could be new. I would suspect that he hasn't been a photographer for all that long. But a professional photographer that is given a credential by the organization now, by extension, works with the organization. Okay, the same way Dana can't come out and bash these guys or Dana's employee, neither can this guy. By extension, he now is not with Holly. He is now with the organization. I could not just expect him to know that on his own, but that's the real problem he has here. The other side of it is he just was a jerk. But we can live with jerks. Jerks happen all the time, right? If you're rude and you're a jerk, you're going to get your own comeuppance in society. That all kind of finds a way to work itself out. We can live with that. It's the credential that's the problem. They do got to take it. And, yeah, the explanation was bad, too. It really was. An apology, either don't give it if you don't mean it, or it is, I was wrong, I'm sorry. That's an apology.
And move on.
And you shut up. And you hope the other person does the right thing. If you're amongst adults, it is incumbent on the other person to go, I accept. That's an important part, too. But I think Cyborg would have. I guess we'll never know. She doesn't need to accept this one. She doesn't need to accept this one. But I'm also not really into burying the gentleman. I think he got it. I just think he misunderstood what it means to have a credential. You're now an extension of the organization.
Yep. That's the same rule. Same rule over here, too, at the sports station. You're on the field. You're part of someone else now.
There you go. He was weighing on some weird stuff, too. He said that he heard Cyborg say that Wink Johnson or Wink Great Jackson. Wink Jackson is the most failed drug tested team out there, and he went on about how wrong that is. Well, I don't have any. I don't know. I don't keep track of those. I suppose there is a way, but I don't know. Without looking at that at all, and I've spent no time, none. I could name four people in that gym that have popped. So they may be, and he chose to take. He tries to take some kind of umbrage with that. I was like, well, wait a second. I don't know that that's right, but goddamn, it's got to be up there. I don't even know, and I got four of them. One of them failed three times. Do I get to count all the? Do I now get to make it six? Why would you even bring that up? Less is more, right? Sometimes less is more. Lay out. I was wrong, and lay out.
You want to hear a weird story about getting credentials flunked?
Yeah,
from my own a little squad. This is before I joined this work, but apparently our squad had tickets to or passes, media passes, to go on to the Oregon Ducks football field.
All right.
We were allowed to be in the stadium, like on the sidelines and all that, if we wanted to. It was not something we could flaunt, but we could. We were allowed to. Well, apparently two guys decided to flaunt that and just ran out onto the field at one point. We've never been back.
That'll do it.
That's it.
Did they get a little sauced up?
You know, we're not supposed to, so...
But they must have.
They might have been. It's almost funnier if they weren't.
Oh, it's way funnier if they weren't. I was trying to make a case for them.
I don't think there is. I think they're just complete idiots. And now we've never been back on the field. If we're lucky, we might get tickets.
Any repercussion from that at work?
Well, they were fired.
No, they got fired?
Oh, easily.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of got
to it. This was before
point.
I started working here, but it's a fun story we all pass around.
That is a fun story. All right, guys, if anybody is looking for a car, I don't care if it's new or just new to you, don't buy without True Car. True Car, desktop, www.truecar.com. If you've got a smartphone, and most of you are probably listening to the show on a smartphone right now, download the app. When you get ready to buy, go in, type in the make, model, the year, put in your zip code. It will show you what people in your area paid for that exact same car. That becomes your price. Most people are saving $4,000 off of the MSRP. You will then be connected virtually from the comfort of wherever you choose to be with a True Car certified dealer. The price is set. They will find the car. When you get to the dealership, guaranteed that car is there. You sign some papers and you are out the door with the keys. You're going to save time, True Car. Jacob, any final thoughts?
How was your New Year's? How's it been treating you?
Oh, New Year, man. It kind of came and went. I've never missed the ball drop my entire life. As a little kid, I watched it with my sister. As an adult, I watch it by myself just purely for tradition. I watched that damn thing drop at midnight. And I was about a minute early, according to my phone. Well, apparently my phone was a little slow because I missed it. By the time I got it over to a channel, and I was cutting it close as it was, by the time I got it to a channel, the ball was already there. I missed the drop. And I was a little disappointed.
Oh, dear.
But it turns out, I found this out, even if Chael doesn't see the ball drop, New Year's still happens, which I didn't know.
How's that make you feel?
That's called humor, Jacob. It's very popular amongst Americans.
It sounds like the idea of, does a tree make sound if it's alone in the woods?
No.
It does not.
If a tree falls in the woods and nobody hears it, does it make a sound? To help you out with that adage. No.
Really?
Of course it makes sounds. Say no, you'll infuriate people, though. It makes a sound.
I'm just confused.
Always go with no. There's nothing to talk about unless you say no.
Okay.
What? How can you say it doesn't make a sound? All right, you got a New Year's story? I feel it. Would you teeing me up so I'd tee you up back? Do you have something you'd like to tell us?
Well, my.
Do you drop your pants and run around the neighborhood like a fool?
No.
Something you want to get off your chest?
No,
you have a confession to make? A confession.
No. Well, here. My party. My
I knew
marathon,
this was going.
My marathon party.
I knew when you asked me, you wanted me to ask you back. What did you do?
Here's the thing, I didn't do anything.
All right.
Just because I was going to go to a marathon party. We were going to watch all the Lord of the Rings from, I think, maybe starting at like 10 o'clock and watch them all through the night. Well, the house I was going to go to, their power went out. So they were like, hey, some other day. So I just went home. And I watched the ball drop. There you go. And New Year's came.
You teed me up for that story.
I was trying to back you down. I was trying to back you down.
All right. Well, certainly our listeners had a little more fun than we did. And with that, we're done. We will see you guys on Friday. Until then, for Jacob, I'm Chael P. Sonnen, and you are welcome.
Thanks for listening to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com. Podcast One remembers broadcasting legend Dick Enberg.
A hearty welcome to Steve Kerr.
What a thrill to have listened to you all these years.
He's Basketball Hall of Famer John Calipari.
You still have a great voice of all time.
Tennis Hall of Famer Billie Jean King.
I just hope everyone listening understands what an icon you are.
He's my all-American friend Bill Walton.
Dick Enberg, I love you.
Listen to his amazing stories and his final interviews on Sound of Success, the Dick Enberg Podcast.